This week on Vox Talks, how many people are recorded in history? Who were they? And what does that tell us? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Can we create a database of everyone in history by combining the sources we have today? Well, this week in Vox Talks, we'll be looking at two projects that set out to do just that, using Wikipedia, Wikidata, and many other sources, and machine learning to make sense of them. Later, I'll be talking to Orash Nekoy of the Institute for International Economic Studies and the CEPR about his project, and that's called the Human Biographical Record. But first, I spoke to Morgane Lawenon of Sciences Po, and first Etienne Vazmer of NYU Abu Dhabi and the CEPR about the database of notable people that they have created. I started by asking Etienne, who qualifies as notable?
So the concept that we have used is a more statistical one. So since the start of history, we think that 100 billion people have ever lived on Earth. Mm-hmm. And we take those for which there is a registry in some of the biographical indices, typically 3 to 4 million individuals. So that would make a sort of elite of 1/25,000 who were notable enough to deserve a biography. They have had some influence on their society at the time, and they are everything but obscure because they were remembered by human history.
And where can you look for these people? As you say, you look for biographical information, but where?
So actually at the beginning when we started this project, like 5 years ago now, we used the Google Own Knowledge database, mm-hmm. which provided a list of famous people with basic information. But actually we just realized that we missed many people using only this source. So then we started to collect all human beings in Wikipedia in 7 language editions, some European ones, French, German, English, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, and Swedish. And then we added the Wikidata universe, which is a semi-structured data set. Actually, Wikidata is also part of the Wikimedia Foundation, like mm-hmm. fed by bots and human beings. And actually, it's quite important to combine these two sources, as they may disagree on some key information about these famous individuals.
So for completeness, is it reasonable to assume that we will get to everyone who's been notable in history by looking at Wikipedia or Wikidata?
It's a very good question. So first, many people were forgotten by historians. Gradually are going to recover more and more, discovering new archives, new archaeological sites. So our expectation is in the end, the process will converge to everyone notable. I've been working here in NYU Abu Dhabi with the best students from the east of the world, from the south of the world. And every year we give them a list of people in the field or the country they want to consider and ask them, who are we missing? And it's very rare that we miss one person. So the Wikipedia contributors, as Morgan said, have been pretty good, even in non-English edition of Wikipedia, to build this knowledge database and capture basically everyone they thought was interesting.
Okay, so it's a start to know who you're looking for, but you still have to extract that information from 7 languages, as they did in Wikipedia. I asked Morgane, how can you do this automatically?
So when we look at the Wikipedia page, first for each individual, we're going to scrape the Wikipedia pages in the 7 language edition, like I said before, at most, of course, because some people may have only 1 page in English, for instance, or 1 page in French. And then we're going to collect the main variables like birth, death, dates, gender, occupation, citizenship, etc. And we're going to extract information based on the collection of keywords, let's say after verbs, for instance, in order to identify occupation and citizenship. So we're going to identify the verb was, is, and then we're going to collect the keywords after that. And for gender, for instance, we're going to collect pronouns like he, his, she, her, in order to identify gender. And then we're going to cross-verify the information across the 7 language editions within Wikipedia, because sometimes we can have some differences across editions. And then we're going to do that for Wikidata as well. We're going to scrape his or her Wikidata page. And like I said before, Wikidata is a semi-structured dataset, so it's much easier to collect this information. And then we're going to compare these two sources, so compare between Wikidata and Wikipedia. We're going to combine both sources as the information can be missing in one of the two sources, or maybe it can be different in one of the two sources.
Wikipedia isn't always correct, isn't it? And it does tend to vary over time, and I would imagine it would probably vary between the different languages. So how do you manage to reconcile those differences?
So indeed, that's by comparison between different sources that we can eliminate most of the errors. When somebody has been documented in three language editions, we verify that each part is consistent with each other. But of course, this is not always the case, and this is a evolving process. We work on data which are evolving. So every 2 years or 3 years, we plan to update the database and correct for errors. Another thing we did is we used some identifiers to avoid duplication. So Wikipedia contributors have done most of the work to try to eliminate these, what we call duplicates. But we have also, on top of that, eliminated something like 15,000 or 20,000 individuals who actually have not been detected as being the same individual from different language and or cultural edition of Wikipedia through various methods. That's where the computational scientists of our team have played a key role, trying to transliterate languages from Russian or Cyrillic alphabet or Hindi or Urdu, and then transferring into the Latin alphabet, and then start a process of comparison with several different techniques.
After you've gone through all of this process, how many people are we left with? How many notable individuals are there in history?
So in our paper, we focus on 2.3 million individuals from at least two sources. Like I said before, we want to cross-verify between these two sources, Wikipedia and Wikidata. Of course, we could identify up to 4.7 million with some from only one source. So for instance, we have 1.2 million individuals that are in Wikidata only. Of course, we can imagine these individuals, so they don't have any Wikipedia page, they are less famous. So that's why in our paper, we also built a notability index based on the number of Wikipedia editions, the number of views, the number of external links in order to identify the famousness of these individuals.
Do we know what these individuals were famous for and whether that's changed over time?
So we have a relatively strong balance between four main fields. So one is the obvious one, leadership, which includes religious leaders, kings, queens, and more lately, politicians, especially after the emergence of democracies in countries. The second group is academia, professors, scientists. Then the third one is culture, painters, and more recently, singers. And the last one, which unfortunately is there, is sport. It's not that we don't like sport, but it hasn't come to dominate the database because Wikipedia contributors find it fascinating to create new pages for their tennis women and men and athletes in general, plus some outliers, which are fun to look at. Criminals, war criminals, terrorists, and a lot of bad guys in the database who are famous because of what they did, even though it was bad action. But they are a relatively small minority. What's important is that the ranking is able to sort out the top of the database and also eliminate a little bit of the bottom of the database. We would like people to think of our database as focusing on the median people in the database, not necessarily the most famous person in the field who have, of course, some impact, but also a mass of people who are not necessarily as famous but have contributed a lot to society, to their local societies.
So how many of these 2.3 million notable people, I asked Morgan, were women?
So the share of women is 18% in total. And of course, if we focus on these individuals born in the 20th century, it's around 30%. So of course, the share of women has been rising since the 19th century. Actually, this rising share is mainly due to the fact that we have a growing influence of sports and culture, like Etienne said. And actually, these two occupations are much more balanced across genders compared to, for instance, governance, which include politics or academics. So that's why we have this increase in the share of women recently.
Women's status in the history of the world was also the inspiration for a similar project called the Human Biographical Record. As Orash Nekoy, who created it with co-author Fabienne Sin, told me.
So I grew up in Iran, and since then I lived in Afghanistan, France, US, and now I live in Sweden. So I experienced firsthand societies where the position of women are very, very different in them. And I wondered, what are the historical roots of these differences? So There are many good case studies of individuals or societies, but what I missed was a unified quantitative approach to this question. There is a school of thought in history called Les Annales, which looks at long-run quantitative history. So what we thought we can do is to bring this thought of studying long-run quantitatively history to the question of women. And that was our first motivation. The second motivation we had was that now, if you, instead of doing international comparison, you think about one country, think about Sweden, we are experiencing an improvement of women's status in our generation. And the question is whether this is representing a long-run trend which will persist and last for a while, or is it a temporary cycle? In order to answer this question, as well as the question of international comparison and the historical roots of that international comparison, you need to have a consistent data across time and space with enough observations. And we became confident that we are able to build such a data for first time because of two recent developments. First one is the greatest voluntary contributions in human history, which is Wikipedia, Wikidata, and the whole Wiki family. So without contributions of these millions of volunteers, we would have not been able to build HBR. The second development is AI, perhaps arguably the steam engine of our time, which enables us to take all this information and transfer them to a data set that we can then analyze using modern statistical methods to write a quantitative history of women.
It turns out that their data is even more male-dominated. Only about 1 in 10 people in it, through most of recorded history, was a woman. But some cultures were exceptions.
One exception is 20th century. But another surprising exception that exactly come back to the question of what's the value of knowing history is the ancient Egypt. In ancient Egypt, the share of women in our data set is in par with what we find in 20th century. First, you might be surprised, but then when we looked at the legal historians' work, they documented that actually women in Egypt, they had equal right to men in many aspects, which they never experienced until the modern time, until 20th century. To give you some example, you know, they could have owned or transmitted property, they would have received an equal inheritance, they could have initiated divorce, they could testify in courts, they could even achieve immortality.
This database also uses Wikidata and Wikipedia as its foundation, but this one draws on all 292 languages of Wikipedia. How can it extract usable data, I asked?
We are using Wikidata plus the 292 languages of Wikipedia plus many other digital sources. The importance of having more sources is to have more people, but also give us more information and more accurate information. More information because you can imagine that, you know, French sources are much richer about historical French characters. But at the same time, having many sources allows us to compare information and detect errors. So for very notable person, for very famous person, we have, you know, a record of her place of birth in many, many sources, and then we can detect errors and that increase the accuracy of the outcome.
How do you manage to extract data from Wikipedia across 292 languages?
You know, we are using machine learning in the same way that we use machine learning to teach a robot to distinguish an orange from a cup of tea. How? By showing him what we call training samples, many oranges and many cup of tea. We do the same thing with our sources. So how we do is that, in a way, one way of thinking about it is that if we show many individuals and tell machine that this is an economist, and many individuals and say that this is a historian, then machine learns over time to distinguish historians from economists. To be more precise, it gives you a likelihood that that individual is an economist and a likelihood that that individual is a historian. And now the question is, what do we feed into this machine? First is text. It's all the text that we have in all these sources. Right? And here we are using neural network and text analysis. And in neural network, you're using state-of-the-art BERT machinery. Second, which is very interesting, is the data set of the graphs of all articles in Wikipedia and how they're linked to each other. So if an individual is linked to many people of, let's say, 13th century, our guess is that that person is from 13th century, especially if we say that his tutor is from the 13th century. So that's how we gather information also from the network. And the power of this machinery is that currently we have data on place of birth, place of death, date of birth, date of death, occupations, religion, gender, family relationship. But if, you know, we are interested in a new variable, if the researchers approach us and say, you know, can you add these variables to HBR? We are able to do that as long as we have a training sample because the machinery is already there.
Now, you're using encyclopedias as well, aren't you, to supplement this information and improve it. Which ones can you use? Are there ones that you would like to use that you can't yet?
We matched HBR with four what we call traditional encyclopedias, which are, to be precise, are Britannica, the Great Russian Encyclopedia, the Encyclopedia of Catalonia, and French Universalis. So these are much smaller samples. Mm. So these are all together, they're just 50,000 observations. But these are important because it will give us a perspective of who, according to the people who wrote these encyclopedias, are important, and we use that. And now, key question you ask is, which one would you like to use? You would have loved to use encyclopedias from China, India, other cultures. We have many attempts on that. We never managed to get a good matching rate. So, for example, what we end up doing, for example, in case of China, we're using a CBDB, which is a data set created at Harvard with the 500,000 Chinese individuals. Now, why this is important to have these traditional encyclopedias? Because we are taking this as a measure of prominence. We're taking for granted that if somebody is in Britannica, according to historians or according to the judgments of our time, is more prominent than somebody who's not in Britannica.
Mm-hmm.
And now we do this for all these encyclopedias across these cultures. And then we try to predict, using machine learning techniques again, the likelihood of, that each individual would have been in traditional encyclopedias. And that likelihood allows us to rank individuals of the same generation within our data set. And that's very important for us because that allows us to create a consistent data over time and over space by taking the cream of the cream on top of our data sets, the people who are ranking high within our data set, so that they build a constant share of the population of each society. Same way that you're studying inequality studies, top 1%. Here we are studying top over 100,000 of population of different societies. But the nice thing about that is that we can go back in time until prehistory, until 3000 BC.
How complete can your record be?
So the number of observations currently is 7 million, but because these data sets are growing, this would increase the size or increase size increase over time, every time that you update the data. Now, the question of completeness of information about individuals is the trade-off between completeness and accuracy.
Mm.
As I said, machine can always predict the likelihood that the person is a kink. So if you want to be 95% sure, the data will be less complete. Then that's what our threshold we use. And now taking a 95% threshold for accuracy, what we did is that we compare the data that we have, the information that we have about each individual, to what happens if we give our data to a human and ask a human to answer the same question. And there, what we see is that we have a very good, what we call coverage, which is if there is the information in our sources, we are very good in capturing it at a 95% accuracy. Of course, for many historical figures, some informations are missing, and that's beyond our capacity to capture that. But for example, let me tell you one interesting note is that, for example, the information they're using about a network of individuals, when we give this information to humans, they cannot use that real information unless they really read the text carefully and realize all the network connection between dots of the network. So sometimes our accuracy, and most of the time, our accuracy goes above 95%, although we have targeted at 95% when we compare our accuracy with the human.
So you might think with 7 million names, most people would stop there, but Orash explains, it's just a subset of the Human Record Project, which you could broadly describe as an attempt to quantify all of recorded history.
So the idea of a Human Record Project is to take the same type of machineries and the same type of approach, but instead of building data sets of human, building data sets of other aspects of our society. For example, the second one that we are working on currently is a human war record. So this is a data set of all the wars in human history, includes like previous data sets, such a data set, the date of the war, the location, and so on. But what's special about it is that you can see the participants of each war, because this data set would be matched with the HBR data set. So you could follow the participant of each war, and then you can come to HBR data set, you can see their family backgrounds, their education, their place of birth, and all the information that HBR connected for those individuals. And that's what's new about that. So what would be nice about this Human Record Project is that all the data sets within them, they are connected to each other. Why we are studying the Human War Record, if you read the book by Steven Pinker, we're going back to the question of trends and cycles. He is observing a long-run trend in the drop in violence. However, in order to make that claim, he used many, many different data sets from different researchers. Here, we can use one unified data set to answer that question. And now, what else is coming in Human Record Project? We have other collaborations with other teams to create other aspects, data sets of other aspects of human history. And we are very open to the new ideas with other researchers.
All of this is fascinating, but my grandfather was a lifelong trade unionist, and I couldn't help but imagine what his reaction to these interviews would have been. He would have been telling us, probably quite forcefully, that history was not made by a few thousand or even a few million great people, but by the collective work and contribution of billions. So, Finally, I asked Etienne and Orash, did they think he was wrong?
So I agree with your grandfather. We think that the super elite is what excites most of our readers. They want to look at the ranking, the top singer, the top painter. But at the end of the day, we think that these are clusters which matter. So if Da Vinci was made the city of Florence famous, it's also because there were plenty of painters and there was a lot of people they could talk to. And that's very important for us. That's why we think that the ranking is good to eliminate people who should not be in the database, but it's not the field on which we should focus only. It's more like the geography and the cluster which need to matter in our analysis.
Our focus should not be on the names of these individuals. But what we hope to measure is a deeper transformations of our societies. And that's why I think it's important to actually not study individuals themselves, but the patterns in the data among the many individuals.
If you want to find out about how the datasets were constructed, and you can access them as well, your first step is probably to read the discussion papers. They are DP15852, and that's across the verified database of notable people, 3500 BC to 2018 AD, and that's the project that Morgan and Etienne were talking about, with co-authors Palash Bhagavan, Jean-Benoît Emeo, Oliver Gargaud, and Guillaume Pic. Also, DP15825, Human Biographical Record, and the authors there, Orash Nekoi and Fabian Sin. This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. Now, every week we bring you notable research, so subscribe to Vox Talks, you'll never miss an episode. And our own historical record of Vox Talks is at voxeu.org/vox-talks.